Hello, welcome back to Railway Mania. I'm joined once again by Phil Parker of British Railway Modelling, World of Railways, and pertinent to this podcast, Garden Rail Magazine. Welcome back to the show, Phil.
I'm happy to be here. It's always fun coming and doing a podcast with you.
So spring is almost upon us, and for many people, it's the opportunity to get back in the garden and start enjoying the open air again. So let's talk about garden railways. I think where it would be good to start is if you could tell us about how you got into garden railways. Where did this all begin for you?
Right. Okay. Well, garden railway for me became something I did because I was a kid who had no money. The impression everybody gets of garden railways is it was phenomenally expensive, and it can be. If you want to spend a lot of money, garden railways is a great place to do it. But when I was, I don't know, sort of teenager, I loved making things, but the idea of making a 00 kit was out of the question because, you know, Romford wheels were sort of fiver each and you've got to pay 16 quid for your motor and everything like that. Garden railways, I discovered you could get into very cheaply. My local model shop would sell me an O-gauge wheel, plastic O-gauge wheel for 20p, so I could build wagons for less than a quid. And I enjoyed working with wood and cardboard and plastic and that sort of thing, and bits of metal and that sort of thing. So I could scratch build. And so, yeah, that's kind of where it grew. I went off and then did proper model railways, as you might call them.
Proper.
A couple of years ago, I was working for BRM, and they were looking to bring the editorship of Garden Rail in-house, and said to me, "Do you want to do it?" Because they knew I'd had some interest in the past, and I'd carried on doing little bits, but and it was great, and I discovered that the world of garden railways, which I'd always been interested in, was absolutely thriving.
And so, when would that have been then?
I mean, certainly my sort of messing around would have been in the sort of early 80s. I came into this a couple of years ago, but garden railways has never gone away. There has always been people working in the garden, and what's changed is that more and more stuff has become available. Technology's moved on. There's a lot of laser cut kits in there. There's a certain amount of 3D printing. There's enough demand to make firms produce more and more products. I think also the one thing that has made a huge difference, as it has in all aspects of model railways, is taking production to China. We still make garden railway stuff in this country. There's a lot of cottage industry manufacturers. But, you know, the biggest name in garden railways arguably is Roundhouse in Doncaster, and they are still making all their locomotives in Doncaster. And you can go along and you can watch your loco being built.
So they're continuing the long tradition of building steam locomotives in Doncaster.
Yes, absolutely. And yes, I have been around the factory, and it's amazing. There are proper skilled people working away at all different aspects, designing locos, building locos, doing all the manufacturing process. There's not much that's not done in-house there. And yeah, they have a test track, so you can see people assembling garrets, for example, and then putting them straight on the test track, where they haul the wagon round with enormous heavy weights on the back of it, because it's not a very big test track, so they have to put a very, very heavy wagon for testing stuff. And yeah, I mean, you can walk up there and there'll be six chassis all working away on compressed air because they all run in. And so, yeah, from that point of view, one of the things about a Roundhouse loco is it's one you aspire to because they are very, very well engineered. But there's also a huge amount of stuff made in China. So there is a move to much more scale models appearing. Locos, you know, when I was doing it, if I could have afforded a loco in the 80s, I would have bought something like a Merlin, and it would have looked loco-shaped, but literally loco-shaped. It probably wouldn't have worked very well, and it would have cost an arm and a leg and been well out of my abilities to actually run. I had a Mammod kit, and they're great, but they don't really do slow or control.
No, a binary throttle, I think.
Yes, that's pretty much it. And I mean, I enjoyed it. It was fascinating. I put it together. It worked. It was brilliant. I mean, lovely. But and you can still buy them. That's the great thing about it. Mammod, also another great British firm in the Midlands, been around there. Again, another fascinating factory to wander around because, you know, they've got everything from a sort of 3D CNC machine in one corner to a BSA automatic feed lathe that we think, looking at the plate on it, dates from the time of the First World War. And both of those machines are working.
still at work.
Yeah, but I say, like, what's
over
happened?
100 years.
Incredible. Yeah, well, the thing is that these things are made. These things are made to last, and they're very maintainable. So yeah, you can have that sort of technology. You can now have proper shelf queen layer locos that, quite frankly, you don't run, or you don't have to run. They are just beautiful to look at, and yet they will run. The world has moved on again. When you go to a garden railway show, you don't smell meths. It used to be the lovely smell of meths. I probably shouldn't say I like the smell of meths on a loco, but it's all...
It has a certain allure.
It says it's all gas now, but coal firing is now very fashionable.
Mm.
Where people are coal firing their 16 mil locos. It's just the way you go. So the hobby has gradually moved on. Now it is a case of you can spend what you want to spend. Cheapest loco I know, I think, is Houston Gate Works. Will do you a complete laser cut kit with all the hardware for about £25-26 for a little diesel.
Well, that's less than a 00 loco.
A lot less than 00 loco. You can, I mean, you slot the bits together, you PVA glue them together, you read the instructions. It's a battery powered diesel outline model. There is a switch sticking out of the side. You push the switch and it goes. It's a forward, reverse, stop. That's what you get. But you can get to you can very quickly look at putting things like radio control in it. You can do all sorts of clever things there. At 26 quid, you can detail it to your heart's content. The nearest that was when I was a lad was Salford Models kits.
Yes.
Now Salford Models, famously Brian Clark's amazing models. Oh boy, did I covet those. I built one as a youth, and I have built one in the last year. You got a load of white metal bits, all hardware, and a plan, and you cut the bits out of plastic card yourself and built yourself a model. But it was brilliant. I loved it. You know, this was wonderful. And there was quite a range. And if you can get hold of any of them, they go for stupid money. Second down on eBay now, these sort of things. This was the same sort of thing. You can buy laser cut kits that, okay, you don't have to do the cutting out, and the stuff's usually MDF rather than plastic card. So many aftermarket detailing people who will sell you things like, you know, rivets, buckets, louvers, handles, lights, all that sort of thing. And that is at the bottom end of the hobby, right? That is 16 mil. You're looking at 16 mil, which is generally 32 mil gauge. It's a very British scale, proper British scale. 1/19th for those who are scale freaks. That's the sort of bottom end. If you've got the money there, then about £4,500 will buy you a Live Steam K1 Garrett at the same scale. And it'll be beautifully finished. We are talking museum quality models here. They are beautifully finished. They are completely detailed, and they work. In terms, you know, that's the spread between steam engines. Most steam engines, you are looking about, you're looking about the £1,000 mark. Okay,
yes.
So you've got to be fairly keen. But that is four full fat 00 locos with a bit of DCC chip inside, and not sound chips either. You know, it's what you want to have on the shelf.
Well, relatively speaking, for the size that you get, you're probably actually paying a lot less.
Yes. In terms of volume, it's very cheap.
Yeah.
The middle ground between that is probably track-powered stuff, where you're looking at stuff from either Backman or LGB. An LGB starter set with an oval of track, a simple four-wheel stains-based loco without all the detail on, and a couple of wagons, you're looking about 250 quid. And it's a big box of train set that you can take out. That track will last you forever. It's made of brass. You can stand on it, you can drive cars on it, you know, you can bludgeon people with it if you want. And you get an oval track, and you can literally just take it out with the kids, plonk it on the lawn, and just have the fun of running a train round and round.
Well, that's the closest you get to like the classic Hornby train set in 00, is that the plug in and play set, it comes out to play with, and then it goes back in the cupboard again.
Precisely. But what you've got with this sort of thing is it's now big enough that the kids' toys can take a ride on the back of the train. If you want to be really sophisticated, LGB do a couple of flat wagons with Lego stud tops.
Clever.
So you can build your wagon yourself. Now, I would have absolutely gone bananas about that as a kid, because I loved my Lego, really did. So, you know, the odds, and I have seen that people have made their own where they've just taken Lego and glued it to the top of a wagon. But it's big enough you can do that. And I would have loved that, to have built my own train, but running around on LGB stuff. But
jumping back a bit, do you think that your experience, so when you've been at shows talking to people who are into garden railways and stuff, do you think that your experience of getting into it for sort of cost and ease of use reasons was similar to many people, or how do most people get into garden railways, do you think?
I think it's similar to some people. I think there's the. I think the first thing you need to remember is that garden railways tend to be very different from traditional normal model railways. In a normal model railway, you are building a miniature version, literally a model of a real thing. A garden railway, this is the real thing. On a garden railway, you are building your own line. You're not building a miniature or something. You're not pretending it's anything else. You might have, you know, Festiniog locos or Tanithlin locos on it, but generally people are tending to build their own completely fictitious line that just exists. That's the appeal. And so your approach tends to be different. And that's partly what gets people into it. I think what gets people into it is a myriad of reasons. Yeah, you know, sometimes they just like steam engines. And if you want steam engines, this is the scale to be at. You can do steam in O-gauge, but it's really rare. I should mention gauge one as well, which we tend to count as a garden scale. That's where you are building steam engines. If you want a real steam engine, then this is the sort of size you've got to be playing with. Some people do it because they like narrow gauge railways, because they just look at it and the prototype appeals to them. Some people look at it because they think, I haven't got space in the house, I'll do it in the garden. Some people are really, really into the cheapskate end of it. Dave Skirchley, who's one of my regulars in Garden Rail, he builds everything. You know, he molds stuff, he builds it. He is an engineer, and he loves making stuff. But he's got a backstory. Every month, the Vale of Weedall Tramway, we get a little bit more backstory. Every article finishes with him sitting outside the Lost and Bodge Works with a pint of old Fagbutt, ruminating on whatever he's built this time. So there's people like him. There are people who are engineers who want to build a loco. There are people who just want to buy a loco and run a steam engine. It's a very much more social hobby, because obviously you can't garden railways around with you. There are garden railway exhibition allowance, but you tend to join, say, the 16mm or the G-scale societies.
So is it a case of bringing the people to the railway rather than bringing the railway to the people?
There's a lot of people will hold their open days in their garden, and they will have running sessions where their friends come round and bring locos, and they'll run on their layout, and they'll open it up as a sort of 16mm association group. They'll have a full day of running trains. But it becomes a much more social thing. If you look at the crowd at a garden railway show, it's much more mixed than it is at a normal model railway show, because the whole family get a lot more involved. There is a sort of cliche of the wife is in charge of looking after the plants or whatever, but which I think is a little bit of a cliche, because there's actually quite a lot of, there's plenty of women involved with the in the building stuff. But you can't hide the garden railway. The whole family is going to be involved.
Yes,
because it's going to be out in the garden. You can't move. You can't miss it.
And also, if you can't retreat to, you know, your workroom and play with it on your own. It's very much in the family space. So if you've got kids, they're obviously going to want to get involved with it if it's in their play area too.
Absolutely. And, you know, I remember going to Elsicar show a couple of years ago, in those good old days when we could have shows. And I walked in there, and it just inside the entrance, there was a large 16mm scale layout with steam locos wandering around. And there were two kids, and I would have put them, they were both less than 10. I would have said somewhere between sort of 7 and 10. And they were stood on the corner of this layout, and their mouths were hanging open, because there was a steam engine going round with a huge train. Basically, a bloke had loaded up as many wagons as he could get on the back of this train. And they were just utterly transfixed, because it was about their eye line, and there's their steam loco chuffing away around the layout, and they were absolutely loving it. And I think that's it, because there is something where there is a cartoony element with a lot of garden railway stuff. You see a lot of the figures tend to be cartoony, a lot of the buildings sometimes that sort of way as well, but it works in the garden.
I think there's a lot of crossover with like classic 009. We touched on this in the 009 episode, that the type of person who's often attracted to that is interested in narrow gauge quite a lot of the time, and almost more interested in sort of elements of whimsy, freelance modeling, that kind of thing, inventing your own universe rather than replicating a real place, like you say. So I think maybe there's that element of imagination which perhaps appeals to younger people or kids, where, you know, the possibilities are endless.
I think that's it. And I think that the point is that you can do everything. I mean, there is definitely a move to much more scale garden railways. There's some incredible scale garden railways out there, but a lot of it is purely about the running and the joy of watching and I keep coming back to steam, but yeah, the joy of watching a steam outline model just running round is, and it's, I think it's something that sits very nicely outside, because if you built a circuit of track, it's not difficult to hide it so you can't see all of it. You can do, you know, a few plant pots around your LGB oval, for example, and suddenly the loco disappears out of view, and then it comes back into view. And weirdly, there is something just incredibly relaxing about just sitting watching a train go round and round. A more advanced garden railway, you can certainly operate it, but you tend to operate it in a relatively relaxed way. Even if you've got several locos running, there may well be working signals because they're not unknown. It's a group of friends running trains, and you just enjoy watching the trains go by again.
Yes. Very, very chilled out kind of atmosphere.
And then when it comes to the construction side of it, it's a lot more hands-on. Yes, there are lots of kits out there. They vary in their scaleness and their whimsiness. And again, really much, there is something for everybody. But it is definitely an area where there is a lot more hands-on construction. I was once told by a manufacturer of ready-to-run rolling stock that simply they weren't going to do any more narrow gauge rolling stock because the laser cut kit market had pretty much eaten the market for rolling stock. Everybody would buy locos. They weren't so fussed about, in the narrow gauge world, about buying stuff that ran behind them.
Well, what's the rule? Is you need one loco for every foot of track that you have, isn't it?
Something like that, yes.
But you only need one set of wagons, so...
Yeah. Precisely. And but people enjoy building the wagons. You can see people with quite good businesses selling kits for all sorts of coaches and wagons and that sort of thing. And yeah, people build them and they enjoy personalizing them.
Yes.
And they're big enough so you can personalize them. You genuinely can have padded seats in there. You can paint it the livery that you want. And if you want,
but it's always also at the size where you can sign write them yourself.
Yes, but nowadays there's a lot of transfers. I mean, you can have a really nice crest, or if you want to do a talithin thing, you can have a really nice crest reproduced and put it on the side. But yes, I mean, you can sign write them. Pete, you see a lot of whimsy sign writing going on, especially on the buildings. People have a lot of fun, but it's a bit like, you know, model villages are something that's a very British thing, whereas you don't get them in much of the rest of the world. People can have their own model village at home because there are plenty of people who will produce you kits, but it's not difficult to scratch build the buildings, or you can, you know, half and half.
Yes, you can relive those hot fuzz moments.
Yeah.
I wanted to talk a little bit about the different sort of types of model railways, because I think you've touched on this earlier, but there's almost two schools to this. And one is a model railway in the garden. So you're basically taking your model railway, say it's 00... like, or gauge one, even, like you say, and they're often at waist or eye level, raised up above the ground, and almost function mostly as test tracks for models. But then the other type of garden railway is the one that's almost blended with the garden. So it's part of the garden. These are often at ground level or on rockery-based ones. How do you feel about the two? I mean, obviously your preference is for the second one.
I've always built the second one. Yeah, even when I was a kid, when I was messing around with Pico SM32 in the garden, that sort of thing, I always built at ground level because that just seemed more natural. I think a lot of it depends on how you're going to operate it for a start. In the larger scales, and in that sense, I mean G scale, 16 mil scale, that sort of thing, the locos tend to be radio controlled. It's perfectly common to have manual control locos, but more and more people prefer to radio control them because you aren't chasing the flaming things around. When your layout's at ground level, chasing a loco that's going at any rate of knots is a whole load of no fun and probably ends up with you falling over and hurting yourself.
Yes.
people prefer radio control. Radio control is easily available, it's not particularly expensive, and it makes everything nice and convenient. You can stand, you can sit in your deck chair with a pint of beer, driving a steam loco around. What tends to happen with the gauge one stuff, and that's the standard gauge stuff, is that they don't radio control their locos. That means you do want it at waist height. No ifs, no buts. You want it at waist height because you are running around after a loco. And so when you look at something like, and what we call in garden rail terms, and we call it the smaller scales, like O gauge and double O.
Oh, it's the well-known small scale.
The titchy little scales that we very rarely cover O gauge in garden rail because it is really a smaller scale. It comes more into the modelling world. Yeah, I think the biggest decision there is how much damage you're willing to do to your garden, because it's really easy to produce a high level layout that looks like it's planks on sticks, and it very often isn't particularly attractive. It's very practical, don't get me
wrong, functional.
Yeah, it's functional. Everybody has got a ground level layout. At some point wishes the layout wasn't ground level so that they didn't have to bend down so much. There are other ways around it. Peter Denny built a pit by one of his stations, because you can actually operate the station as a real railway, and he built a pit, so you had to walk down into the pit, so the layout effectively then became ground height.
I guess you've just got to check the water table in your area in that case.
Or where waders.
Yes.
But yeah, if you want, I mean, a lot of it depends on how it's going to look in the garden, because I think, as you say, garden railways really do want to blend into their surroundings. Now, some people are perfectly happy, layout on sticks, very, very practical, very, very easy to use. Doesn't look at all prototypical because essentially, as you say, it's a test track, but it's what they enjoy. And they look at it and say, well, I'm, you know, the loco, everything can charge around, I can get at it, and I'm not bending down all the time.
Also, I think there's that that sort of childish glee in seeing it go on a long run, which you can get in the gun because you can get a much greater distance than you can in your living room. So Absolutely. So even if it's just on like a layout on sticks, then it can at least stretch its legs a little bit.
Absolutely. There is a double O layout outside is an absolute joy. What you tend to do with double O layouts is you don't build a particularly complicated layout. You keep all the points and everything in the shed usually. You are watching your trains as though you were watching a real train. It's effectively like you're watching it from a distance, a field or two away. And, yeah, you can run a great long train. Don, something who built Birmingham New Street in his shed, unfortunately long since gone, built a couple of cooling towers and a power station in his garden. And he could run full-length MGR trains. Now, there's the other thing to bear in mind with that, though, is there's a whole different challenge there, because suddenly your locos have got to be able to haul a full-length train in all conditions. Yeah, the track will probably not always be perfectly dry. So that loco has got to have enough traction available to pull that 12-coach train or that 100-wagon train. And there is definitely enthusiasm with those guys for less detailed models. They will make the thing out of die-cast stuff, and I don't care if the lamp irons aren't on it, because I can't see the lamp irons from a distance, but boy, does it look fantastic hauling a really long train.
Yeah, you get a sort of spectacle from it.
Yeah, and you can do the spectacle in O-gauge as well, which is almost unheard of, short of something like Heaton Junction, where he's got a warehouse to work with. You are really looking at, you do want to be outside, but watching your loco, and this applies to all the scales, watching your loco with a reasonable length train on, snaking its way around the garden is an absolute joy. Yeah, I have got a very small oval in the back garden, and that's it. I mean, it's not very big. It's 6 foot wide and about 15 foot long. It's not a very big line, but watching my little vertical boiler steam loco pottering around with six or eight skips on the back is lovely, because there's not a lot of straight track, so you watch it snaking in and out. And the same thing in O-gauge, where you've got effectively a main line and you can just watch that loco really stretch its legs at full tilt, but it's in view for a long period of time, and you can watch the train move. That's brilliant, and that's what you can do in the garden. It's very difficult going do indoors.
If, for example, if we're looking at recent examples, so New Junction, the YouTube channel, is currently building an O-gauge one in the garden, which starts out at ground level and then goes to sort of this raised one. I'd say that's more falling into the first camp. So if we talk a little bit more about the second kind of garden railway, where you're I mean, if you're in a partnership, then it's almost always a collaborative effort of compromise of how much garden the railway can use and how much gets devoted to plant life. I think that trying to blend those together is almost an art form.
Yes. There's a lot you can do, actually, with things like box hedge and that sort of thing, where you can cover up the sticks that the thing's being supported on. There's always practical aspects to bear in mind that if the supports are made of wood, they are going to need to be treated. So you can't, if you bury them in plant life, then you're probably not going to get the wood preservative on them, and that's going to be the ones that are going to rot fastest. And it's, you know, also, what happens if a train comes off? That's something you've got to consider. But it's like mostly it's going to come down to the look, because this is going to be a big impact on a lot of people's garden. So it's got to look nice. Now, you can run stuff on viaducts. You can build stone walls. There's an awful lot of stuff. I mean, again, one of the beauties of what we have nowadays is there's an awful lot more garden equipment out there. So, you know, building a stone wall isn't out of the question. You can find something like Brunel Models, who will build you a viaduct in Gauge 1, and it'll be absolutely stunning. You know, you pay your money, and you get a beautiful garden feature. And I think that's what a lot of people are finding, is that it's a feature in their garden now. And so, yeah, you can be completely, you know, you can be completely utilitarian about it, and it's literally layout on sticks. Or you can spend a lot of time trying to blend it in with the garden. It's going to depend on the rest of the family. But then it's a family, it's very, very much a family hobby, I think.
Mentioning Brunel Models, I think if you want to see some really mouth-watering stuff, if you are on Instagram, if you look at Brunel Models on Instagram, the stuff they make is incredible. It's, like the scale of the stuff and the way it feels and looks and the way the shadows fall on it and everything, it looks amazing.
It is absolutely stunning. I would, you know, were the lottery to come up, and I'm suddenly buying myself a place that with the space, you know, aside from filling my dream garage full of all the wrong sorts of cars, I am going to ring up Brunel Models and say I want to model a Port Erin station from the Isle of Man, because I've seen their model of Port Erin station in Isle of Man. It is absolutely stunning. And, you know, I wouldn't have to be a very big lottery win to get me on the phone. And handily, I actually have the locos to run it, so I'm laughing there.
Well, you're halfway there already.
Yeah, I've got the locos, so I just need the space and the station vehicle. You look at their stand at a show, and it's beautifully made. They're really lovely people to talk to. The quality of it is there. But again, modern manufacturing techniques, there's a lot of CNC routing going on there to make the models, because they're made of a sort of plastic. The sort of thing that would have been real craftsmanship years ago that would have taken forever, they can actually do it at a sensible price. If you're the sort of person who wants to buy into having the stuff put into your garden. One of their models that they did, which featured in Garden Row, is actually a Taj Mahal. They were commissioned to do a Taj Mahal inspired station. The guy wanted literally them to build him a garden railway, and they built him a Gauge 1 garden railway with this most incredible station building, with this slightly incongruous German locomotive running through the middle of it. But it,
of course,
it's just an amazing piece of construction. So, yeah, these guys can do anything. But my point is that they're not alone. There's, you know, there are people out there like I don't know, Bowl Laser, who will do you a very nice wooden kit that really looks the part and is perfectly accessible and buildable by your average modeller. You need to use some waterproof PVA glue. It's about the main instruction you'll need to follow on that one. Don't use the cheap stuff. Go and buy the blue bottle of Resin W if it's going to live outside. And most people do leave their stuff outside every so often. So there is a maintenance issue to consider with all this as well, that buildings will need to be repainted. If you've got ballasted track, you will need to reballast. You will need to treat it like a real railway and maintain it.
Oh, a friend of mine, he's in the last couple of years built a garden railway, and he's found that he might actually need to put a sort of a tunnel, or actually more like an avalanche shed, because above the running line are the bird feeders, which obviously come with their own problem.
Yes, come with the problem, because that is another one of those great there are considerations. Friend of mine runs O-gauge in the garden. He's got a wonderful, large, very simple O-gauge layout, and he was telling me that what somebody he knew was saying, well, why hasn't your king got inside working valve gear? And he said, simple. I've seen what a slug can do.
Oh.
Yeah. You, if you're picking bits of slug out of the bottom of your loaf, you want outdoors. It nice and simple. It's But those sort of considerations are there. On the other hand, if you've got ballasted track, you can have, you've got to consider the plants that are around it. And quite a lot of work goes into thinking about the plants. But the plants can also grow through the ballast. So suddenly you've got a living version of that overgrown narrow gauge look that we all love. You know, if you look at the Talith Lynn of the 1960s, for example, you know, or 50s, that overgrown track look, it's really, really appealing. You don't see it anymore. Because they maintain everything properly. But there is just something about that. Now, you can have that on your garden railway, but you've got to trim the things back with a pair of shears or something every so often. You know, plants just do get in the way, and every so often they have to be clipped back, just the way it is. But it's a different sort of, it's a sort of maintenance you have to enjoy. That does mean that, you know, some people will be on all year round because they will do the maintenance, a lot of the maintenance in the winter.
Oh, yes. Well, we'll come on to the seasonal side of garden railways in a bit. But let's talk a bit about motive power, locomotives, engines, the different types of propulsion that people use. So we've touched a little bit on live steam. Let's come to that in a bit. But I think anyone who's talked to me for more than 10 minutes knows that I go on and on about radio control all the time. And this is something which I think has been more prevalent in garden railways than in indoor railways for obvious reasons. But you mentioned at the beginning about people who buy LGB often use the track power versions. Let's talk about the pitfalls of using track power in the garden. I mean, there's the obvious one, which is dirt.
Yes. Dirt is the biggest. There are two areas, dirt on the railhead, okay, and dirt between the bits of track, basically, around the fish plates. Start with the bits of track, first of all, that fish plates do get dirty and you do need to clean out between them. Usually a spray of WD-40 in between each fish plate will do the job quite nicely. I'll be honest, I now use track clamps, which are basically a bolted version of a fish plate to really make sure the track stays put. And it improves the continuity as well, because you can get a paste that you put between, you can either put it in the fish plate or you can put it between the track clamp and that sort of thing. So yeah, you've got continuity between the various rails to worry about. And yes, that's a bit of a pain.
And I don't think you can do that whole DCC trick of just wiring up every single fish plate, because that would be a nightmare.
But you're working out in the garden with very, very fat rail that becomes difficult to solder. And so your solder joints have got to be really excellent, because they're going to have to live out in sub-zero temperatures and hot temperatures. And I think with track power, largely we're looking at LGB or Backman G gauge. That tends to be the way we're going. So yeah, there's that to consider. Now, it's not a massive problem. It's not as much of a problem as you might expect, especially if you run reasonably regularly and you're happy to just take the can of WD-40 two or three times a year and just blast it into all the fish plates.
So it's not something you have to do before every running session?
No, generally you can get it. Again, it'll depend. You will find that fish plate where the continuity has gone a bit wonky, and sometimes you can just wiggle the track backwards and forwards and that'll clean enough. But say spray the WD-40 in there. That'll usually do it. It's not something you have to do before every session, but again, your mileage may vary. It depends on where you are in the world, how damp or hot your world is, how dusty it is, how buried your track is in dirt and that sort of thing. So there's so many variables to work with. The other thing is the railhead. Now, I mean, quite frankly, you can use a track rubber quite happily on it.
Because it's more robust than the indoor stuff.
Yes, it is. It is. You can use, LGB do a track rubber, and so do garden rubber specialists in Princess Risborough. They will do a track rubber on a bit of stick, and it's a lot bigger and wider. It's, I think it's gel flex or something pads. And you can polish the rail tops with that. Then you can look at some sort of battery powered or track cleaning loco. Pyco do a really nice little American shunter in 45mm gauge, which has got a couple of sort of scouring pads stuck on the bottom. And you just let it go running round and round. It'll polish up your track a bit. And then once you move up beyond that, you are looking at an LGB track cleaner, which is a honking great big diesel with a nose on it, with a couple of wheels that spin against direction of travel, basically grind the dirt off your track quite nicely. I'm over-egging it a bit, but it really does make a good job.
sort of a miniature version of Network Rail's rail grinder.
Pretty much, yes. You can have that. It is a honking great big thing. It's probably about 2.5 feet long. It weighs, it's very heavy. It needs a decent controller as well. I think you've got to bear in mind that your average LGB controller will do, I think they're only about 1 amp. They're not particularly powerful. You need something, for garden railway use, for that loco, you need something with a bit more guts. The basic train set controller will run it, but it won't run it very well. You really need something with a bit more guts in it. But that tends to be, you only tend to buy one of these things. Go and buy a halfway decent one. That will do a beautiful job. And it's amazing how long that track stays clean. One thing that LGB do is they don't rely on pickups on wheels. They actually have skates on the track. So there'll be plunger pit.
Well, the Playmobil ones are the same, I think. The same tech ways.
It was LGB when Playmobil made trains.
Well, unfortunately, no longer in production. I thought it was a great way of introducing people to garden railways.
They are great. And every year I've gone to the toy fair in London, and every year I've looked around the Playmobil stand, desperate for them to reintroduce the train range. The Playmobil trains have quite a following. You won't find a garden railway show where there isn't at least one or two hiding around places. You can still pick them up for sensible-ish money, most of them. They all use the same basic mechanism. There's it's an 040 mechanism, and
it's like a power block kind of thing.
Yeah, a power block, and it goes in the steam loco, it goes in the diesel. There was a wonderful large German train which has the same power block in the middle. And in fact, you can have versions with two power blocks, one in the tender as well. And it's great because, as you say, it's a great way of introducing people to the hobby. LGB, now Playmobil have gone away and not done this thing. LGB actually have sort of moved into that area, and they make a couple of beginner sets with Playmobil type people in them and diggers and that sort of thing. Their toy train range, which is less detailed, a bit more robust, and with a bit more play value. They do. In this year's catalogue, they've done another version of it. So you've got some bright yellow track maintenance trains, and there's a digger. Yeah, there's an extension set with a digger in there. That's lovely. So there's proper play value going on. Well,
there's some
on.
Hope there then that there'll still be affordable and robust enough for kids to play with garden rail sets readily available.
Again, LGB stuff, £250 gets you into a starter set. Would you like a rotary snow plow with steam sounds and steam coming out of all the appropriate places, not just the top? Yes, you can have one of those. £4,500. Yeah, no, it's once you get into the base of it, there is something for everybody. But you bear in mind that base train set is full fat 00 loco with DCC in it. And it's not even that, again, that's not a sound chip in there. So you've got, You can get into it relatively cheaply. The wagons start, I mean, to be honest, a lot of the wagons actually you can pick up for higher end 00 wagon money. They aren't as detailed. They will take falling off a shelf quite nicely.
Oh yes, we've experienced that. Yeah.
So you can get into this for sensible money. Would you like to? What would you like to do with it after that? Well, the world is your oyster. I say the track isn't cheap, but that's because it's made of honking great big brass rail, and you can walk on it and it'll last forever. There is a value for money aspect there. If you can deal with the tight train set curves, and a lot of people do in LGB lands, you go to a G scale show, you see enormous locos running around incredibly tight curves. If you can deal with the train set curves, which I think are, I think they're 4 foot diameter. There's an awful lot of that track available for sale because a lot of people bought the train sets and then decided they wanted to sell the track on because they didn't need it anymore. They just bought it for the loco. So that,
yeah, well, it's like Radius 1 Hornby curves. You know, there's tons of them around.
As far as the radio control goes, you can go very, very cheap. LGB do some radio control in there. There's an awful lot of people who converted their stuff to radio control.
Yes, well, this is where, so my closest experience of this is my friend Rich's Railway. So he started with the Playmobil stuff, detailed it up and everything. Wasn't quite happy with the track power running, wanted to go RC just for the ease of use. And he was able to get very, very cheap RC gear. And because he's got a really good grasp of wiring and stuff like that, it was fairly easy for him to do. But I was wondering, what are the options for someone who's maybe not that confident with wiring to go RC?
Again, it depends on what you're going to do. If you want to convert an LGB loco, yes, that's going to be interesting depending on the, it's going to, a lot's going to depend on the loco. Okay, there you because you're going to need to put some batteries in there, and putting a decent sized battery in there can be challenging because a lot of them aren't designed to take a battery. So
yes,
there's a little bit of jiggery pokery in there. You could put the sort of thing with my other model making hat on. You could put a model boat radio control setup in there, and that will mean you'll need to buy a receiver, which will cost you about 15 quid, and you'll need to buy a battery. And you'll need to buy a speed control, and a speed control costs you $19.99, I think. And you'll need a transmitter as well. But you'll probably bought a transmitter and receiver as your first thing. So you could go battery for less than 50 quid, and that includes buying all the gubbins, and you've bought your first transmitter as well.
And often you can use the same transmitter for different logos if you pair
them
differently.
Just buy more receivers, no problem. You could go for something like the Deltang system or the Fosworth stuff. You're then starting looking about £100. But Fosworth especially, very nice guy to work with. If you want advice, he's there for you. And now what you're looking at is, instead of having a stick that you've got to hold to keep the loco running, you've got a basic like a fat remote control. It's about the size of, well, once upon a time, you sort of said it's about the size of a packet of cigarettes or something like that. with a knob, and you can change between locos, and you've got faster and slower buttons on there. That's all perfectly doable, and very, very well regarded. And they will also do stuff that will run steam locos as well. You know, literally, you can radio control your live steam loco. Yes, it is doable. If you're at the battery electrics gayest side of things, where you've built your laser cut kit, again, things become relatively cheap. It's really easy to wire one of those things up. Essentially, you've got battery, you've got motor, two wires connecting the two, and usually a switch in between there. So all you do is your radio gear sits in the middle there, and essentially, say, something like Viper speed control will do all the speed and the reversing you want, and you just plug a receiver into it, job done.
Well, is it easier with those kind of flat pack locomotives because yes. you've got space. The inside space that's not crammed full of weight?
Yeah, it's not crammed full of weights. It's not a sophisticated setup in there. It's probably a motor that's cost about £3. It's probably easier to start messing around there. You would then go, oh, well, hold on, it's costing me more than the loco to do this. But there is new technology out there. I've just fitted a loco up with something called Loco Remote, which is a very clever little device where you've got a box, for want of a better word, that plugs in between the motor and the battery. And what it does, it sets up a Wi-Fi hotspot. And you take your mobile phone, or your smartphone, sorry, and you go to a web page, which you look for the Wi-Fi hotspot generated by the loco. You go to a web page, and all the controls are on screen. Forward, backwards, speed controls, sound controls, they're all on screen.
And that also means that you won't get to using it and find that your controller's got no batteries, because you've always got your controller in your pocket anyway.
Yes. Yes, you've always got your controller in your pocket. It's designed for this use. It's about, I think the full fat version with sounds is about 50 quid. And it comes with really excellent operating instructions. You pay less if you don't want sound on it. I think it's about 30 quid for the basic unit. It works brilliantly. I have to say, I was massively impressed. It knows how much battery power you've got there. So if the
That's one of the biggest things that people always ask me about. Are you worried about the battery use running out? But I think also that people have in their mind, like, I remember when I was 10, for Christmas, I got this amazing remote control hovercraft. And it was so much fun for the 12 minutes that you could use it for. And then you spend 4 hours charging it up. But those days are gone. I mean, the days of NiCad batteries and all that kind of gubbins is gone. Like the rise of LiPo batteries and smartphone batteries and things like that, you get so much more runtime for the amount of charging time you have to put in.
Yeah, I mean something like I've always thought a little scared of LiPos because of the joys of them exploding and that sort of thing.
I mean, everybody should be forced to watch, before they wire one up, they should be forced to watch a LiPo battery exploding on YouTube.
But something like NIMs, nickel metal hydride, something like that, they charge really quickly. And to be honest, in loco use, they last a long while. But it depends on the space you've got in your loco. Quite frankly, if you've got a big enough loco, I would be inclined to put a lead acid jelly cell and it will just run all day.
Are those used quite a lot in model boats?
Yes, you do. And you probably use them for exactly the same reason, that weight isn't an issue. I've built model boats, for example, where I'll happily put a lead acid battery in there, because if I don't put a lead acid battery in there, I'm going to put some lead in there anyway. So why not make the battery do two jobs? And with the Loco, it's the same sort of thing. If you can, you can get these things that are very small now, and they've got quite a capacity. And if all you're doing is shuttling around little four-wheel diesel, three or four skips on the back of it, it'll probably last for ages. To be honest, in that sort of world, people just tend to use dry cells, and you've just got a four cell with some Duracells in it. And again, they last for ages. A couple of years ago, I built a garden railway in a day in the National Garden Railway show at Peterborough. And it was literally, it's an oval of track. So you've got about a 15-foot run. Most of the day was operated by one laser cut kit loco and train from IP Engineering, and I just plonked it on and I put some batteries in it, and I switched it on and just left it running, and it ran most of the day.
Well, how many people came up to you and asked you about the cost of that setup that you'd put in the Garden Railway show?
Some did, because, and it was cheap. I mean, deliberately, it was plastic track. I bought some X Triang big track, or Fowler track. There's quite a few O gauge plastic track systems out there, and I just spray them black because then they all look the same. And you don't, because suddenly I'm not worrying about track power anymore, because as soon as you've got
this batteries, this is what I keep saying, but will they listen to me?
Well, you've got batteries, and I mean I deliberately wanted to do it absolutely on the cheap, because I had no budget for this sort of thing, and I needed to spend the budget I didn't have on gravel and soil and plastic sheeting, so I'd clean it up, and plants and that sort of thing. That's where the money needed to go, and it didn't need to go on buying track. So I got a big bundle of, you know, plastic track, and I just painted it black and ran. But the Loco ran happily all day on that. Now, we changed it over occasionally, but yeah, it pretty much ran on those. It ran on those batteries, and it, you know, these little three to six volt motors, they'll last forever. So there is something, again, at the bottom end, you can do it very, very cheaply. If I've got a 4.5 grand Loco, I will probably, if I'm honest, take it to somebody like, you know, Fosworks, and say, make that radio control. There is also, I should say, with track power, there is also in the LGB range, there is also DCC. If you really want some DCC going on, and if you've bought your rotary snowplow, you really do want the noises. There is DCC available there. There is radio control. There are several radio control systems over the years that have appeared for doing garden railway stuff from both here and the States. I was massively impressed with the Loco remote stuff when I installed it, because it literally went in, no trouble. All the plugs were provided with wires sticking out of the back of them. So you just need to be able to connect wires up, and yeah, I fired it up and it was like, this works. And it was brilliant. Yeah, on my smartphone, I'm just pressing the buttons on the screen. Great for getting kids involved again, because they will comprehend the smartphone interface.
They're incredibly intuitive control systems. And I think that appeals to children because they're so used to just using technology that way now.
So I think one of the things I'll say to people is there is really something for everybody in this hobby. You can come at it from the cheap and cheerful end. You can build the stuff yourself. There's multiple different control systems that you can have. And bear in mind, also, they're all compatible with each other, in the sense that there is nothing to stop you running a live steam Loco on your on a line populated with battery electric Locos. The only limitation with live steam Locos is if the wheels aren't insulated from each other, then you've got an issue with track power. But insulated wheels are generally offered as an extra for your, when you're buying your Loco anyway. You can then run track power and battery and steam all on the same layout. The track can be exactly the same.
Well, and your friends can bring their stuff too. They don't have to be running the same control system as you.
Absolutely. It's a big part of it, being able to take your Loco and your train round to your friends. I mean, I'm a member of the local 16 mil group in the Midlands. We have, or rather, I should say they have, because I've only been down a couple of times. I'm a bit too busy to get down there often enough. But they have a modular layout in a farm building. What happens is, running sessions, everybody brings down, you know, a box of trains and just runs their own train. And that's what they're doing. They take everybody, it's very well mannered, and everybody takes it in turns to steam up and run the train round, and then they go off and the next one comes up, and that sort of thing. So, and everybody just enjoys standing around watching trains go chuff and chatting.
That's batteries and battery electrics. Let's talk about the leap to live steam, because obviously this is a huge draw for some people. But is this where model railways become model engineering? What's the leap in skill requirement?
I think it depends on how you're going to approach the live steam. Live steam is perfectly doable by your average person if they buy a live steam loco. I know it sounds silly. I mean, you can, I don't know, smelt your own metal from stuff you've dug in your back garden if you really want to. But if you're capable of doing that, then probably you're wasting. You know enough already. You know, you can go to any of the traders are advertising garden rail or SMT or something like that. Say, here's some money, give me a live steam loco. You then need to read the instructions, because there are instructions about putting gas in, putting water in, making sure you put oil in, and the right oil. You've got to use steam oil in the lubricator, not 3-in-1, but you want some 3-in-1 for all the other oiling up and that sort of thing.
Just like the real thing.
It is. And they behave. You have to treat.
But it is the real thing.
It is the real thing. You have to treat them sensibly. They will, you know, there is all sorts of learning curve. It's not like an electric loco, we turn the power on, it just goes. There is a learning curve, because you have to light the burner. I mean, they are powered by gas generally. You've got a gas canister that you've bought from the hardware shop. It's got a long nozzle on it that you, because you bought the adapter, you only need one. You fill the gas tank, and then you light it frequently by either putting by turning the gas on and having a flame over the chimney, or on some locos, the smoke box door opens and you put a flame there. You've got a burner, and you've got to learn to adjust the burner to the right level.
What's the price of failure with this kind of thing, though? Because obviously you're dealing with elemental powers. So what's almost the worst thing that could happen? Like, if anybody's wondering, like, I'm just scared about what might happen if it goes wrong.
It's not going to explode. If you've got a modern commercially made loco, it is not going to explode. Right? That's one thing to bear in mind. People get very worried about boiler pressures and that sort of thing. They're tiny, really. And say commercially made locos, not an issue, because they will have certified they have to do the job properly. It's that simple. What you're probably going to find is that it just won't run very well because you've not adjusted it. One of the common ones, especially it seems to be with Accucraft locos, is that people burn the paint off the smoke box door by having the burner up too high. Yeah, you don't.
Well, prototypical for a lot of industrial railways,
but
main lines.
Yeah, it is. But unfortunately, with that, a lot of people will leave the burner up too high, because it basically, if you can't talk next to it, then you've got burner up too high. You've got to. What you do is you do learn with that sort of thing. I would say nowadays the joy of the internet is go and look at some YouTube stuff. And look at some steam locos. They're not difficult things to deal with. I'm not really a steam man, but they are not difficult things to deal with. I think you do need to consider the loco you're going to buy. Accucraft do some very nice sort of generic locomotives. They have for many years. I've got a Ragleth, there's an Edrig, there's a, I can't pronounce the two new ones they do. Roundhouse, again, if you can afford a Roundhouse loco, it'll be beautifully engineered, and there is loads, from both there is loads of customer support.
What kind of price range are you looking at for a Roundhouse?
I would have said you've got to start considering sort of £1,000 to £1,200. That's sort of where you may get lucky. You may get lucky and pay a lot cheaper. I bought my Ragleth for £750 second hand.
Is there much of a second-hand market for
this?
Yes,
there is a massive second-hand market. Once you've got back on your chair after I've given you that price for the loco, now bear in mind that if you look after it, it'll still be worth the money. You will get that money back. If you look after it, and that means, don't drop it, don't dent it, don't scratch it. If you can pay people to line it out and decorate it, and there's stuff you can add, and that won't detract from the value. In fact, it may well enhance the value, especially if it's a nice lining job. You can, you will get that money back. And there is the sort of standing joke that everybody says, I'll only need one steam loco. And they always end up with more than one steam loco. But
yes. They get lonely. That's the problem.
They do. They get lonely. They like to have friends. But you can frequently trade them in. There is a thriving second-hand market for steam locos. Somebody like John Sutton or anything Narrowgauge, they do this all the time. They've always got second-hand steam locos in. I would say buy a loco that you've seen run, or buy from a dealer you're comfortable with. This is probably an area where you've got to have a little bit more about you if you're buying sight unseen off eBay, for example. you can do it, but you are taking more risk. If you go to one of the main dealers who advertises and say, this is what I want, they will fit you up with a very nice loco and you'll enjoy it. Scale locos can be more tricky because it can be difficult to get inside the cab. For example, yeah, Accucraft's new Tower Thin number one is a nice loco, but the cab top isn't removable, so you've got more of a challenge getting your fingers in to get at the regulator.
I mean, the real thing is hard enough to swing a shovel inside.
Yeah, precisely. So when you've got a scale version, it becomes a bit more challenging. That said, I know, we've got a review in the current issue, in the March issue of Garden Rail. I know I've got a friend who's got one and absolutely loves it. And my friend is a P4 modeller, and he's also a fireman and driver on the TR. He has taken that loco apart in real life, and he loves his Accucraft model. So, you know, he's picky, and he knows this is right. And he's also got a Dolgok and a Tom Rolt to go with it. So, you know, he's a TR freak. But there is definitely mileage in, if you can, and I know it's tricky, I know it's impossible at the moment, but it is definitely worth going to shows and events to see to see other people's locos and see what works for you. I would not pitch in with a 4.5 grand Garrett as your first loco. Bear in mind that when you're running these things, they get hot. Burny fingers.
Famously.
Yeah, famously. They get hot. They need water putting in them, and you must use, yeah, you if you're in a hard water air sink, don't just pour water straight out of the tap in them. You want some soft water in there. They do need to be oiled, they do need to be looked after and maintained, but then you've got the joys of a proper working steam loco. And they're not that difficult to run, especially if you've got radio control in them. You've got what the other thing to do is, if you buy a steam loco, don't plonk it on the track as its first run. Prop the buffer beams up on blocks and run it on blocks to get a feel for which bits get hot, how good is the regulator, that sort of thing. But once you're there, it's steam is very attainable. It's not cheap. I won't lie to you. I had the person in Proof 3's Garden Rail after me once came back and said, £2,500 for that locomotive. Is that the right number? Yep. Because it was a Gauge 1 County, I think. Beautiful model. You know, really nice. They aren't going to make very many of them. Production runs probably about 50. Okay. £2,500. Yeah, fair enough. You can spend that on a loco kit. Something like Barrett Steam, based in the West Midlands, will sell you a bolt together kit for a Gauge 1 steam loco. And they're fantastic.
What kind
kits.
Of skill level is required of that, though? Is it like a Halford spanner set level, or is it a slightly more advanced?
Yes. They've done all the work. There is, I think, if you go, they do various levels of kit. Barrett are really interesting because they do various levels of kit, from the beginner's kits, which essentially are Halford spanners, basically. You can screw the bits together. They've done all the thinking for you, done all the R&D. You get bits, and you buy them in installments over a year. So it's like a part work. So, yeah, the boiler, 1 month, the boiler arrives, and that's it. It's just a lump of boiler.
So it's almost like they're taking you on a journey of making it.
Yeah. But you do have to build it and set it up. I mean, April's Garden Rail, we've got somebody here. We've got a group of four guys who decided they would all build the same loco. They've all bought a Barrett 2P, and they've all thoroughly enjoyed the process of building it. Now, it's a beginner's kit, so the bodywork is preformed, but there is some fettling to do. So you'll need to know how to use a file, but nothing particularly complicated. If you want something narrow gauge, Roundhouse will do you a kit for a loco. Again, that's sort of £1,200 by the time you've bought all the options. Again, it's bolt together. And both of these companies will offer really good after-sales service. So, you know, I know with the guys with the 2Ps, they actually sent them back to Barrett for final setting up of the timing. They got it nearly right, shipped them all off. They came back, set up absolutely perfect. Roundhouse, you can talk to them, and they will make sure that your kit works at the end of the day.
So they have a real relationship with their customers then?
Absolutely. These guys are all at shows. They are all there, and you can talk to them. Most of the cottage industries, you know, the bloke stood behind the counter is also the same person who designed and manufactures the kits. So, you know, if you go to see Harecroft, for example, who make obscure little wagons, Matt, who is stood behind there, does everything. You know, it's not his main job, but he does absolutely everything. And he, you know, he designs it, he 3D prints bits, he laser cuts bits, he packs the boxes. He's there. Same with virtually all the people there. Even, you know, Accucraft, who are having stuff done in China, you can talk to Graham, who basically is the man there. Roundhouse, you've got the same team of guys who have stood behind the stand, and they're also the ones in the area. People who are doing laser cut, rolling stock, you know, they design and built it. And they all, you end up with a relationship with the trade more than you perhaps do in the smaller scales, where people do, buying ready to run. There's an element of shopping around for the cheapest. With this, you know, it's that $4,500 Garrett is going to be $4,500 no matter where you go. Mm. So you buy it from a company you're comfortable with. So, for example, you can buy that from anything narrow gauge down south. You can buy that from Garden Railway Services in Princess Risborough. It makes more sense probably to buy it from your local dealer than it does to buy from, you know, the other end of the country, if that's an option. If not, they're only on the end of a phone or an email. Again, talk to them. But the other thing is, massive amount of support. When anybody says, how do you get into Garden Railways? And this pops up on Facebook every time. Two answers I always give are, subscribe to Garden Rail, obviously.
Natch, yeah.
And join the 16 Mill Association. 16 Mill Association is absolutely brilliant. It has branches all over the world, but mostly in Britain, and produces a good magazine. It's got loads of local groups. You can go along and take your new loco to the local group, and you will find people who will help you set it up and run it for the first time. To me, that's what it's all about, you know.
So there's a real community spirit, really.
Yeah. And good cake.
Phil Parker, seal of approval is to have good cake.
It's very important.
Let's talk about the final one then. Coal power. You say this is more of a recent development in Garden Railways?
No, there always has been coal-powered locos. People have always done it. And in both Gauge 1 and 16 mil and G-Gauge as well, there always has been coal power.
But something I would always associate with 7.25-inch and above. I hadn't really thought about it so much for such small, firebox doors.
Yes. How do you poke that shovel into such a small firebox door is a question I've asked several people. And it's certainly why in Gauge 1, they have their layouts built at waist level, because that's a whole load of no fun trying to find it, trying to poke the stuff in the hole if it's down on the ground.
Especially if it's moving.
Yeah, well, no, you're cold while stationary. It is noticeable that it's an older demographic for Gauge 1, and they're not as nimble to run around chasing a loco and throwing coal in as it's moving. But I've definitely noticed a move to more people coaling real coal in 16 mil locos. There are companies like DJB who will do a conversion who offer conversions for various locos to lay to coal fire them rather than gas firing them. And I know people who love the challenge of coal firing. I've never done it. I know it is different to gas firing. Gas firing is, you know, a little bit more. You've filled it full of gas. You've got the burner about right. That's it. Forget about it. Coal fire requires a different set of skill. It smells different, though. It smells wonderful.
And yes. I think it would depend for me what mood I was in. Do I want to play with trains or do I want to operate a locomotive? Because I think that's that's the distinction there.
I think that's it. And I think that's why there is a definite enthusiasm for them. There's that extra challenge going on there. It's not for everyone, and don't forget, it is going to cost you considerably more, because you've got to have, yeah, there is very little in that. You are getting a coal-fired loco built, or you are getting coal-fired loco converted or something like that, and there is more maintenance because you've got to get the clinker out and everything, and you know, but for a group of people, it's something they really want to do, and ultimately, I say, there is something in this hobby for absolutely everybody.
Do you see it catching on or becoming more widespread?
No, coal firing is catching on. More and more people are having a go at it. But it's not massive amounts, because most people are perfectly happy with gas firing. They're perfectly happy standing there operating with it. Yeah, if they're steam locos, they're perfectly happy standing there operating their loco radio control. In the Gauge 1 world, they're quite happy. They're still mess firing in places. Certainly a lot of the Barrett locos are mess fired. This is why it's something that you really kind of want to go and see before you dip your toe too far in the water. But it is quite addictive when your toe's in there. It's quite addictive.
Yes.
I I bought a steam loco because I became editor of Garden Rail and I thought I ought to have a proper steam loco. I mean, I got a Mammod. I'd built a Mammod kit years ago and I bought a steam loco and I run it a little bit, but I'm not that much of a steam buff. And then accidentally seemed to buy a second steam loco, a little Regner geared drive vertical boiler loco.
It's amazing how that happens, doesn't it? Yeah. Those accidental purchases.
Yeah, I just saw it. I was sitting there working. I looked at Facebook and there was this thing and it looked lovely and the video looked lovely and it was a sensible price and I bought it and it's manual drive and it potters around nice and slowly and I absolutely love it. But then I then went away and bought some Binny engineering hoppers, which are about £10 each. They're little for skip wagon kits, and they're plastic, stick together. I built one on a BRM TV a few months ago, and literally they are a plastic kit. You stick together, cost you about a tenner each. I built a little train to go behind me, a little Regner vertical boiler loco, and it was great, and I really enjoyed doing that. And so when the good weather returns, because I'm very much a fair weather operator. Yeah, that will be pootling around. And if we can ever get back out to the 16mm dose, that's the loco I will take because it behaves itself.
I was thinking about what you're saying about the coal firing side of things. It's almost going one beyond DCC sound and you're almost getting, well, DCC smell in a way. It's the extra sense.
Bear in mind that there is a definite interest in the noise of these things. Roundhouse locos come fitted with them already, but there is you can buy chuff pipes for chuffers for AccuCraft locos, literally just screw into the blast pipe area.
So this is the Garden Railway equivalent of going to Halfords and buying a big exhaust for your Honda Civic.
Yeah, pretty much. If you want a better chuff, you can buy a chuff pipe that will give you a better chuff. And I mean, there's so,
that appeals to me.
Yeah, there really is so much you can do. Tag Gorton, who I mean edited Garden Rail many years ago, and still, you give him a steam loco, he will not leave it alone. It'll get a whistle. It'll get all sorts of jewellery, as we call it, all over it. And he will very much make it his own. The last time I saw him at a show, which was Exeter a couple of years ago, he had got a working air pump on a loco. So there is so much you can do with these things if you want to do it.
The conclusion to that is he looking to do a fully air-braked train?
Didn't get into that. He was just really excited watching this little air pump up.
I mean, that's the next stage, yeah, isn't it?
I mean, again, technically, you can do it. It's big enough scale. You can do anything you like. I mean, I have occasional tram, large-scale tram articles appear in Garden Rail. And you can build a tram in exactly the same way you build it, that a real tram was built. Yeah, the woodwork is exact same. Coaches are built the same way, and wagons generally are built the same way as the real thing, and out of pretty much the same materials most of the time. You'll certainly be using a lot of wood. You know, you can happily bend bits of metal and use and do what you like to do that. Whereas in the smaller scales, it's very unusual to use the right materials. In the larger scales, no reason why you shouldn't use the right materials or completely the wrong materials, because we get a lot of 3D printing turn up. We get a fair bit of resin turn up. So, you know,
how well do those kind of, I'd say, indoor materials do outside? Because obviously, being exposed to the elements, it's a bit different to, well, attics are pretty bad at heat regulation and things like that. But outside, you're getting sun, rain, frost, all those kind of things.
You don't generally leave your rolling stock outside. It's unusual. There is actually one model village, and I've forgotten the name of it, but they do leave their rolling stock outside. It's all LGB stuff, and they leave it outside all year round. It lives in tunnels overnight, but essentially leave it outside. Generally, you take your rolling stock indoors, so it's not much. But it is going to get wet. You know, it is going to rain on it, and it is. You know, if you've gone out in the cold, it is going to get cold. And so, but most of these materials, as long as they're painted, protect them from UV light. They seem to survive okay. Yeah, I mean, wood, you can sanding seal it if you're really worried about it being porous. But generally, the same protection that you would give to a real wagon applied to a model wagon will do the job very nicely.
I think that leads us quite nicely onto one of what I would say is the biggest advantages of enjoying a Garden Railway is the light and the weather. So the Great British Outdoors can be a bit iffy in terms of weather, but natural light always looks incredible.
Natural light will always look lovely. In the winter, you will see Facebook groups for Garden Railway fans full of pictures of people running their trains in snow. They love to run their trains.
People almost praying for snow so that they can justify the cost of the snowplow that they bought.
They've got a snowplow, or they just brush the track off and they just run it because it's great fun, and they can take a photo of their train running in snow. And that's all types of power. Bear in mind, you know, there's not an issue with track power in the snow or in the rain, because there doesn't seem a problem with conductivity there. And that applies to all the scales. I know 00 Garden Railways that run in the snow, run in the rain. If you pour tap water on them, it stops them running. If you run them in the rain, they're absolutely fine.
I do remember many, many years ago, somebody with an N-gauge garden railway, German outline, and it was things like, you know, he'd have landslides where, you know, soil would block the track and they'd have to dig it out and plants growing all over it and everything. And he never had any problems with concrete.
If you really want to do it, you can do it. And yeah, I mean, N-gauge is a bit extreme, but...
Yes, it was the exception.
But it can be done. You've just got to deal with the maintenance. You've got to keep the track clean, obviously, clear, obviously. But yeah, people use it all year round. I think the thing with the garden railway is that it's always going to look different because the plants grow up, because you're using natural planting around it. The plants will change through the year. And so, you know, sometimes, you know, they'll be in bloom. They'll look different. You'll run it and they'll be greener or less green. Or, you know, leaves are a pain in the backside. Leaves are an absolute pain in the backside.
Just like the real thing.
Yes.
The wrong type of leaves.
They're huge things, and yeah, they're a pain. But yeah, the garden railway will always look different. So, you know, in just to the appearance of the thing. And again, down how much maintenance you've done on your buildings. Your buildings live outside. Have you repainted them and that sort of thing? It's very much more a living entity. Whereas if I build an indoor railway, it pretty much stays the same as I built it. If I build a garden railway, no, it's going to change. Even things like the track moving slightly, the ballast moving and that sort of thing, because it's heated up and cooled down and that sort of thing, and stupid animals have walked across it and left mess. And that sort of, you know, it can all happen.
The local residents messing around with the track. Coming back to natural light again, I think that there is this idyllic image in my mind of watching your loco chuff around with the evening sun glinting off it.
Yep.
And plumes of steam rising into the air. I mean, that's kind of the dream.
It is the dream. And yeah, the great thing about it is you can have proper brass work on your loco that you can properly polish, and you can watch it glint in the sun. And the thing is that there's an atmosphere then. The moment you're doing that, suddenly you've got an atmosphere that you just don't, you don't really get on an indoor railway. Suddenly you're sitting back and there is more than just the steam. You don't notice the lack of rivets. You don't notice that it's a generic loco. You don't bother about that sort of thing.
Or even that it's out of scale to its surroundings. I think that coming back to the flora of garden railways, obviously the plants aren't going to be in scale unless you just populate it with bonsais and other plants like that. But I think that I find that my brain almost does a trick where it sees one-to-one scale plants and it sees a miniature railway, and it'll kind of bridge the gap between them.
Absolutely. It happens all the time. I think, yeah, there are lots of different approaches to this. I know people who build sort of tunnels, not actual tunnels, but lots of view blockers with sort of ground cover green plants, so they don't look too out of scale.
There was one that was known as Mind Your Own Business, and I have no idea what the Latin name was, but everybody called it Mind Your Own Business. It's this amazing ground cover that just looks like grass or weeds.
Yeah. And yeah, you can put in smaller plants. Things like flowers become a bit trickier because they are very obvious in your face, but a garden railway running through flowers just looks attractive in a cutesy, cartoony way. But if that's what you're into, then yeah, it just looks beautiful. My garden railway in a day I build at shows, I always make sure I've got some pansies as part of it. I know they're stupidly out of scale, but it just makes it look nice. I'll buy green, you know, I'll make sure most of the stuff is green shrubby things. But yeah, I think part of the thing about the garden railway is that very often they've got to look attractive as a picture. And the railway bit isn't the be all and end all of this. It is about an attractive scene. So, you know, you've got your viaducts or your stonework or whatever and your buildings, and there is a cuteness about it, and that's just simply it. It looks nice, it runs nice, it smells, you know, if you're running steam, it smells nice. It is nice.
In terms of choosing plants, if you're like me, then your choice of plants is mainly based on what survived. So it doesn't tend to be the more colourful end of the spectrum.
The other thing is, this is an interesting contrast between British and American modellers. American modellers have, the American Garden Railway publications, when there were some, they focused a lot. There was a lot of stuff on plants. I've had articles in Garden Rail from Americans and had to go back to them and say, send me more pictures of trains. The Americans focus a lot more on the plants than we do. In Britain, we want trains. And the plants are a backdrop.
It was putting the emphasis on the garden rather than the rail.
Yeah. But there are, as I say, there are books on garden rail planting. There is a lot you can do with garden rail planting just to make it, as I say, it's all about attractive. And if I'm brutally honest, ease of maintenance. Yes, you can have something that will grow like crazy, but you're going to spend all your time clipping it back. Actually, what I want is, I want something green, lumpy, shrubby that doesn't grow too fast, and I don't have to go round the layout trimming things every time I want to operate.
In summary, then, getting into the garden, not as hard as some may think, not as expensive as some may think,
and it's every bit as fun as it looks. I think that's the key. Is that, yeah. It's not. It's nothing like as difficult as you think it's going to be, and it is a huge amount of fun. Look, if all you do is take a battery electric loco and an oval of plastic track, or you go and buy an LGB Star Trek and just treat it like a temporary railway. Real railways, they laid stuff and took it back up again. Chuck your bit of LGB oval on the lawn, and you'll realise just what fun it is. And then you can take it up and mow the lawn and put it back down again and all that sort of thing. So, but the thing is, there are garden railways for all out there, all sizes, all scales, all pockets. And there is an awful lot out there to see. Do look at YouTube. There's an awful lot of stuff there. Obviously, I'm going to say do subscribe to Garden Rail, which is available from all good news agents as well. And if you go to the World of Railways website, then you can subscribe from there. We have inspiration every month for you. And also, when shows return, keep an eye open for garden railway shows. You may not think that it's entirely your bag, but trust me, you can take the family to a garden railway show and they will have a good time just watching the trains go by. And ultimately, if that's all you do is just go to garden railway shows and enjoy them, that's brilliant. Just enjoy your hobby.
Fantastic. Phil, thanks so much for coming back on the show. I hope you enjoyed it.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
Excellent. All right, well, hope to see you again soon.
Cheers.
Massive thanks to Phil for coming on the show, and I hope this inspires you to build some of your own garden railways. Railway Mania is on social media under Railway Mania on Facebook and Instagram, and Railway Mania Net on Twitter, and the website is, of course, railwaymania.net. Thank you all for listening in. As always, I hope to bring you another podcast before long. Bye for now.